Oliver Berkman, in his book 4,000 Weeks, said, "The real problem isn't our limited time. The real problem, or so I hope to convince you, is that we've unwittingly inherited and feel pressured to live by a troublesome set of ideas about how to use our limited time, all of which are pretty much guaranteed to make things worse. Reading, for some, is one of those things that we feel like we don't have time for. Feels like a luxury, a frivolous pastime for those who don't have real jobs. Reading for pleasure or just for personal growth was something as a young mother I always felt I was contending for. I didn't really have the budget or access to use Audible or other audiobook platforms that, I don't know, may or may not have been around when I was a young mum, but when I did read, it was intentional, slow, often in short bursts, but it was deep. Nowadays, I can't afford not to read. As a home educating mother, as an author, as a leader, or simply as a living, breathing human on earth. If growth is the sole end of education, Charlotte Mason said that, then grow I must, by books upon books, whether large or small, paperback, Kindle or audio, books it is. Today's guest is a shining example of the ever-evolving reading mother.
I make goals for myself in reading, and I actually am at a stage in life where I can do that. There were stages in my life where I'm pretty sure, except for what I read to my children, I wasn't really reading hardly at all. Maybe when I was nursing the baby, I was getting to read a little bit, but there were probably about 10 years where I didn't get to read. One of the reasons I make reading goals for myself is not so that I hit the goal, but so that when I sit down and I have a choice between binging some TV show and reading, it pushes me a little to read more than watch.
My friend Cindy is a beloved returning guest of the podcast, and today we discuss her reading life, how books have molded her mothering, how she's sharing this via her own podcasting, and there are quite a few recommendations during our conversation, which I advise you to hop onto Goodreads, find her on there and all her titles. She's very good at keeping her lists updated. I, on the other hand, am not. I apologise. Friends, our 2022 workshop schedule starts on Saturday, the 5th of February, where we'll be kicking off with the Modern Mother's Education course. We are starting with discussing health, which was one of the components of Charlotte's pre-World War I Mother's Education course as well. I'm so excited to share my conversation with Dr. Sally Bell. Go and do a search on her. She's awesome. And we dig deep into sleep, eating, health and hormones. Do not miss it. Tickets will be available next week. And as usual, tickets will be on a pay what you can basis. Okay, let's jump into this fabulous conversation with Cindy Rowlands. My name is Leah Bowden, and this is the Modern Miss Mason podcast. Cindy, thank you so much for coming back on the Modern Miss Mason podcast. This is your second time, I think, isn't it?
It is. I love being on this. It's so fun to talk to someone in England.
Yes, it is fun, and I know... Obviously, we've hung out here, and I think you're maybe the first guest to come back on. So that's very exciting. I'm starting to do.
Oh, very exciting.
That's how you know you've been podcasting for a little while, when you want repeated guests and your favorite guests to come back. Well, today, I think last time we did talk a lot about, and if people are listening, they want to, I don't really do my podcast in numbers. So you'll have to search for Cindy's name on the Modern Miss Mason podcast, and you will find our conversation. We focus a lot on how you discovered the Charlotte Mason philosophy, and we really talked about your journey with her and her philosophy. And today, I would like to dig a little bit deeper into your reading life.
Now, just tell everybody briefly, in case there are some who may be coming across you for the first time today, just can you give us like a potted history of who you are and a little bit about your journey in homeschooling and family life?
I am, I want to say how old I am.
No,
I'm
you don't
really
need
old.
to. No, you're not.
So all my kids are grown up. I had 9 children and they're all grown up. My youngest is 20, almost 21, and full adulthood coming straight on. And so I homeschooled my children almost the entire time of their childhoods and adulthood, till they graduated. My last son, we did some other things. But I heard about Charlotte Mason early on, praise the Lord, and read For the Children's Sake, changed my life. It just gave me a vision for what I wanted for my children. And I think that was what I had my eye on the whole time they were growing up, just how to give them this rich education. And for good or for ill, sometimes I hit the arrow hit the mark, and sometimes it didn't. We had a really good time reading together and growing together as people. And now they're all grown up. So now I have way more time to read, but I'm still deeply affected by Charlotte Mason. I still
Oh, yes.
use her ideas every day. I like the idea of reading a lot of books at the same time, but slowly over a period of time.
Yeah,
That to
yeah.
me has helped me retain a lot more than I would have otherwise. So, I'm still a Charlotte Mason mom or
Yeah, and
not mom.
it definitely is for life, isn't it? And I think that's why I appreciate that even though she wasn't a mother, she spoke so much into motherhood. And we're going to get into one of the kind of the course she set up for us many, many years ago. But the fact that she talked about growth, intellectual growth, always having something to grow by, isn't just for, well, definitely not just for our children or for the child rearing years. But I know for me, her philosophy and ideas has set habits and a lifestyle really in motion that I know I won't be able to turn back from. So I love that you're an example of that, Cindy.
Yeah, and I think it's a good example to the children when they're grown to see that you're still a person, still pursuing these things.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting what you said about reading. I'm probably jumping the gun, but I'm going to go with what I'm thinking.
Oh,
What you said about
let's go.
reading multiple books, but reading them slowly. So I was thinking about that. The beginning of the year, actually this happened at the end of the year. So December, there were lots of things on social media and even people blogging, and they would kind of have pictures of piles and piles of how many books they've read that year, and which is fantastic. But there can be this pressure of how on earth does someone read 100 books in a year, or even 52 or 12 or whatever it is. And I
Right,
read
right.
something which was, and I know we're going to get into that a little bit, but there's a guy, I don't even know, let me just see who he is. He's called Adam Grant. He is an organizational psychologist. That's who he is. And something he posted this week really struck my eye. And he said this: speed reading is a way to consume more content while gaining less insight. The faster you digest, the less you grasp. The point of reading is to enjoy and learn. It's not, it's about quality, not quantity. A great book should be savored like a gourmet meal, not inhaled like fast food. What do you think about that, Cindy?
Well, I love that. I love a lot of his stuff. He has some very thoughtful things to say to modernity, and I enjoy his
Yes, he
ideas.
does.
And I do read over 100 books a year. I'm in a season of life where that's not that hard. But I did, in looking over my book list from the last few years and or to prepare for this podcast, it really hit me how the longer books I read or the slower books that I read have stayed with me a lot longer than, just some of the quick murder mystery, the murder mysteries
Yeah,
you
yeah.
read for the fun of
Yeah.
it. they're page turners. You get through them really quick. And then you know what? You can read them again in 6 months because you can't even remember who done it. when you do reread it, they're just a distraction, and that's okay. That's a good distraction. Sometimes we need that. Yes. But it isn't about the numbers for sure. One reason I make goals for myself in reading, and I actually at a stage in life where I can do that. There were stages in my life where I'm pretty sure, except for what I read to my children, I wasn't really reading hardly at all. Maybe when I was nursing the baby, I was getting to read a little bit, but there were probably about 10 years where I didn't get to read. One of the reasons I make reading goals for myself is not so that I hit the goal, but so that when I sit down and I have a choice between binging some TV show and reading, it pushes me a little to read more than watch.
Yeah, that's
good. So there's this tension between that, you know, no, we're not trying to get through as many books as possible. Charlotte, actually, her way of reading across a wide range of books actually does help you get the numbers, but you're not getting them all quick. Like you might be reading 10 books at a time and you might actually be finishing 10 books at a time, but they might be books that you've been reading for the last 6 months.
Right.
And that they stick with you because you've just slowly read them. And sometimes I don't let myself read the next chapter because I know I'm going to, you know, I've filled up and it's not going to do me any good to read the next chapter right that minute just so I can say I finished the book.
So do you, I mean, lots of my listeners will be familiar with the term commonplace, or even just note-taking or underlining or whatever. How do you process? And obviously I know every book you don't, so you're reading a quick murder mystery. This is not really always the case, but how do you do your note-taking commonplace? Do you draw lines in the book? Do you do notes in the margins, or do you have copious journals with beautiful notes in?
No. When I journal, it's ugly and that's okay.
Mine too.
Yeah. I just accept that. Sometimes if I'm reading a book, the other day I was reading a book I didn't want to write in because I picked it up. I just ordered it online and it came and it was signed by the author. So I didn't want to write in that book and make all these notes. So I did commonplace. I do have a place for that. I have a commonplace. I actually have one of the Lit Life. We have commonplace books you can buy on Amazon from the Literary Life podcast.
Yeah, so beautiful.
And I use it more than I thought I would. So I'm very happy about it. But a lot of times, number one, if I will buy a book on Kindle if I think it's going to be a book that I need for talks I'm going to give or something I think I'm going to underline a lot, then I have all the Kindle notes. And that's very helpful to me. A lot of people go, oh, no, you shouldn't say that. But that really is helpful for me
to have it
on Kindle.
Yeah.
And I will mark books up and underline them. I am a person, I like books. But I really like the ideas. So I don't take the book as a sacred object that I can't mess up. I will underline.
Sure.
I will make
me
notes.
Too.
I will you know, I don't, not many of my books are collector's items, so I don't worry in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I do collect vintage books. I don't spend tons of money on them, although I do have some very beautiful old copies of Charlotte Mason's, some of her volumes, so they're very precious.
Oh boy, yeah, I wouldn't write in those.
Yeah, no, I do have particular versions that I write in, but no, I'm the same. I actually like to, I mean, people might be cringing while I'm saying this, but I don't mind folding down pages, underlining, doing pencil notes. I know that I realize that means I won't necessarily pass that on to a friend, but I am creating my own library and it is about the ideas. I love what you said there. I think that's great. And I have a commonplace book, but often it's, you know, it's not quite naturally the way I work is to read and have a book next to me. I don't really do it that way. But often an idea from a book will become something else, won't it? It'll become a conversation on a podcast. It will become your own book idea or a talk idea for, you know, if you're speaking at a conference. And I love that, that ideas from books can become our own and then they take a different face, don't they, in our lives?
Oh, that's like the Trinity. I mean, all creation becomes kind of a Trinity when one idea meets another idea.
That's right.
It becomes a third thing. And I love that about life. And that's why it's so much fun to have an idea, not just so you have that idea, but that idea does things in your mind and you have the new ideas.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, you know, this is, again, linking right back into Charlotte Mason's philosophy with ideas that we see in our children. And I do pray this with my kids every morning, that we would have great ideas that are formed from our reading and what we see and what we experience and the beauty around us, that you have these connections from the various different things you're reading and seeing and experiencing, and then you make it your own and take it into your story. And books play such a big part in that. I just think it's fantastic. So how Charlotte Mason talks about always having something to grow by, and I see books being a big part of that, of being our part of our intellectual growth. Now, you said when your children were younger that you didn't, you know, outside of their books, you didn't have the time and capacity to do the kind of reading you do now. Where did you see the shift happening? Was it very gradual, or has it been only over the past few years?
No, it was very gradual. It went from, because some, you know, it's that moment in time where you nurse the last baby, but it's 6 months later before you realize you did that.
Yes. Yeah.
Or you changed that last diaper, but you didn't even know, you know, you didn't mark that in any way. And that is sort of how it is with reading. You just gradually, your time increases as you're, you know, as you get a third, fourth, fifth grader, your youngest is that age and they can work independently.
That's
suddenly
right.
Your time opens up a little bit.
Yeah.
And you have a little bit more time. And then gradually it comes to the point where we ended up having a completely empty nest for 2 years. And then two college kids moved back in. Oh. So our nest was not as empty as it had been. And it was a really good experience to see. It was a jarring experience, like, oh my goodness, my nest is completely empty. What am I now going to do with my time? And that's where the discipline of, no, I'm not going to sit here and binge watch this TV show. I'm going to, you know, keep reading. And that is one reason why I keep reaching out to moms and still keep myself fresh. You know, when you take a lot in, you have to have some place to. Yeah, you have to.
That's right.
It has to be a flow. It can't just be a taking out or putting in.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, I love that. And I think, yeah, you are, again, the beautiful example of someone who has raised the children and home educated all the way through. And then yet you see this call to be able to encourage mums and keep. Yeah, I mean, you're the example of your life and your reading life. I mean, at this point, Cindy, why don't you just tell listeners about the other your podcasts? Is it two or three you do? I'm trying to remember.
No, I don't do three.
Two.
I'm limping along with two.
But okay.
we have the Literary Life podcast, which I do with Angelina Stanford and Thomas Banks, and we just talk about books and we just have a blast talking about books. And there are some one-off episodes if you want to jump into a book you've already read, episodes on certain books. We have a lot of one-off episodes on like the detective novel, or you know, what is a classic play, or you know, what's a tragedy, what's a comedy. So we have some of that kind of stuff on the Literary Life podcast, and we've had a lot of fun with that, and it's done well. And then this year I started the new Mason Jar, which is based on an old podcast I had called the Mason Jar.
Yeah.
Reopen that up for the express purpose of getting some of the older moms, some of the retiring Charlotte Mason moms, and some of the younger moms too, not just older moms, but I had such a rich friendship with these older Charlotte Mason moms. I really wanted to get their wisdom out into the world, someplace where people could access it. And so that was why I went ahead and restarted. So I have that also.
It's great, and everyone should go over. Definitely, I'll link to them all in the notes on this podcast. So the Literary Life podcast, you do a challenge at the beginning of the year, don't you? What is that challenge? I've heard a few people talking about it, but I haven't quite caught up with it yet.
Yeah, every year we come up with some new idea. Like we started out, it was 19, 20, 21 for last year. Well, it was actually, we started the year before with, I forget what it was. But this year we did two for 2022. So we have 11 categories with two books in each category. So a category might read a Victorian novel, and then by a male author and by a female author. Those are the two.
Very good.
And we have 11 different categories, and it's just something fun to keep your reading focused and to give you a chance to, like Charlotte says, have a little reading, not just only read murder mysteries. Yes. We do have read a classic murder mystery and read a modern murder mystery on there, so, or detective novel. So it's not all dry and boring stuff. We have a lot of fun stuff. So we try to make it very doable. We don't make the list too long. And it's been a lot of fun, and we've had a lot of participation, and you can hit it a lot of different ways. And I think this would go for any reading list that you're trying to do. What I generally do is just read freely the first half of the year and then kind of pick and see, oh, I've already filled in the challenge. You know, it's almost always filled. I only need like four more books. And then I'll say, then I'll pick more carefully the rest of the year to make sure I fill in the challenge.
That's great. I like that. I like that it's not kind of a fixed number, a huge number that is often seemingly unattainable, but there's such variety and creativity in that. That's really good. I'd love to go check that out, actually. I did say this. I told you this the other day, Cindy, when we were chatting on Voxer, but I only properly started using Goodreads last year. I thought I probably should start just making a little list for my own mind of what I'm reading, and I didn't want it to become another social platform. So I wasn't going to have any friends, or wasn't going to kind of connect. I just wanted somewhere to put, because you can scan your barcodes, you can find books easily, and you can find the reviews on there. But then I discovered that you were prolific on there, so. May everybody know, Cindy is my only friend on Goodreads, and because I just love looking at your reviews. Now, it's so interesting. I didn't realize till the other day that you can do this, but you can actually compare books. Did you know you could do that? I'm sure you did. So I can click on this books that you and I have both read.
Oh no, I did not know that.
Yes. Isn't that a great idea? So
that is wonderful. Yes.
Now, bearing in mind, I only started to put my books up like, I don't know, mid last year or something. But here are a few books that you and I have both read. Apart from lots of Charlotte Mason ones, I won't go through all those. That's a given. We've both read Culture Care, Makoto Fujimura. Oh, that was great. This must have been, some of these will be a long time ago for you. We've both read Sabbath as Resistance, Walter Brueggemann. We've both read Hannah Coulter. Are you remembering any of these?
Oh, I remember all of them. All of them are very memorable books.
Yeah. We've both read Sean O'Niquis, Bread and Wine. We've read C.S. Lewis, The Weight of Glory. We've read Wintering. That's my Siri going off. We've both read Wintering, Catherine May. We've both read The Book Woman of Troublesome Creek. I enjoyed that. That was a good one. You put less stars than me on that one, Cindy.
Yes, I did. I struggled. I'll just be honest with you. I struggled with that book. I have family in Kentucky, so maybe I was a little harsh on that book for getting a few things wrong. Okay. But otherwise, yes, if you're from England, that's interesting, and you're reading because it wouldn't affect you.
I did not have a clue. That's right. I found it. And in fact, it kind of opened up an area of study. I was like, oh, I'm going to research this. And then the book I mentioned to you the other day that we've both read and I now have finished since I spoke to you is Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And that was fascinating. And I really, when was that? And I think you said to me that you have probably helped put his book into the world, right? Because of
your
review.
I feel like I've single-handedly made people read that book. A lot of people have read it. I've been very pleased. I've heard from a lot of men, like women that say, oh, my husband really liked that book.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of book that I think helps it. If you're a mom doing Charlotte Mason and you want your husband to understand what you're doing and why, and if it's going to work in the modern world, then I think Range, great book, even though it never once mentions Charlotte Mason, of course.
No,
but it's the kind of why this would be a good education in our world.
That's right. So the book basically paints this fantastic picture of story after story of story of how we need to have a more generalized education rather than a specific one, and how, but he tells so many case studies. I mean, I love the one about Van Gogh. I love the one, I mean, there's just so many really amazing. And also starting later, I like that idea of, you know, because I always call myself a slow bloomer. I think that I have very gradually opened up to academic life and reading. And I love those stories when, I'm trying to remember the lady's name, but there's one story he talks about where there was a lady who didn't really start a full-time job till she's in her 50s. I don't know if you recollect this. And then she...
Oh, I do remember that. And then she became very prolific and then just went on to great things from there.
Right. Up until being... I think she... I don't know if this is... people may be correcting me as I'm speaking, but in the story, he said she at the time she was 100, 101 and still working.
Yes. So, I remember 90 or, you know, I know she was quite elderly something. And still working.
Yeah. So, but that's an interesting one. I'm sure people will look into that. So there we go. There's a feature that we can all have a look at now in Goodreads. Compare the books that you've both
compare
read.
The books. Yes, I can't wait to do that.
That's a great idea.
If I had time this afternoon, that's what I would do.
That's what you can do. So you've mentioned a little bit about detective novels and things like that, but you know, tell us about your reading of fiction, because there's so much great non-fiction which helps us grow and expand our understanding of different things, whether it's educational philosophy or child rearing, whatever it is. But from your perspective, what part does fiction play first in your life, and why would you encourage us to keep reading fiction?
Yeah, I read more fiction when my kids were young. I noticed that I was not reading as much. I tend to more nonfiction when I'm not reading aloud. But right. I kind of make myself read fiction because I think fiction is a very important part of making these ideas work. I just finished with my Patreon group. I just finished That Hideous Strength, which is C.S. Lewis. He also has written, it's a fiction book in his space trilogy, it's based on the philosophy of his essay, Abolition of Man. These philosophical treatises, which many people struggle with, they're very difficult to understand. And I've read them multiple times, but you grasp after them. But then you have this fiction book, That Hideous Strength, which puts all of that into a working world. And suddenly those ideas are, you're like, whoa, this really makes sense. So I think fiction is very important to our imaginations. The way our imagination works is so important to us understanding one another, for us relating to one another. And fiction does that so much better than nonfiction. We live in a very literal world where we get on Facebook and we don't catch nuances and we get mad at someone because they said this, and we don't have any, we need our imaginations to be able to imagine other people in a kind of a narrow confine of how we do it nowadays. And so I highly recommend fiction. Now, it's tricky. If you read new fiction books, more modern fiction books, it's a little bit trickier because our modern sensibilities, we want to make the story do what we want it to do. Right. And we don't let the story, often the story doesn't just do it accidentally. Like even Lewis, he's not using those ideas to teach us something, but he's telling the story so that the story will do the work. So we have to be very careful that we're not using fiction or literature. But we also, I just read a wonderful fiction book by Diane Setterfield called, she wrote The 13th Tale, but this was called Once Upon a River. It was such a beautiful story that I was so delighted that this kind of story is being written even in modern times. But fiction is a very important part of our lives, and we should be very careful not to let go of it because we think it's not relevant or useful or utilitarian.
Yeah, that's so helpful. I know my story is very much very similar. When my children were a lot younger, I read a lot of fiction to them, but I would personally read more non-fiction. Maybe it was about theology or just raising kids, educational philosophy. Mm-hmm. But and I've got a couple of friends in my life who would hold me accountable. They'd be like, okay, Leah, what fiction are you reading? And they would ask me repeatedly until I could with integrity tell them. Okay, but now I have something on the go, sometimes two, all the time, because it's just so powerful. And so, I mean, you read the, you know, I mean, I've just really got into the Wendell Berry, Port William series, and just really, really enjoying them and seeing the humanity in the stories of motherhood and marriage and family and just, and his take, obviously his insights into farming life and community are just amazing. Mm-hmm. And really it was the homeschool community that have introduced me to Wendell Berry. I don't know if I just haven't heard too much about him before, you know, hearing fellow homeschool, American homeschool community, really, who've read his stuff. And I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful for that. And then once you kind of almost open up a fiction valve, don't you, in your brain, like it's like, okay, I can keep going with this. But
yes,
I think it's important.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you shouldn't feel badly about that. That should not be, that should be a high goal, not, oh, well, I read a lot of fiction this year. That should, you should be very proud of that, not feel like, oh, like I wasted my.
Yeah, I agree. And again, a great example, you know, for our children, seeing us reading a variety of books as well. Cindy, you said that you do read over 100 or over 100 books a year. You did mention that you have intentionally chosen to pick up a book rather than kind of binge a series. Do you have any other little tips that would maybe help us if we do want to pick it up a tiny bit, you know, pick it up a notch? How would you help us to read a little bit more?
Well, it's very counterintuitive, and I think a lot of people who come to Charlotte Mason find it counterintuitive to read many books at the same time. But in the end, it really helps with our moods. For instance, you know, I'm not going to read because, oh, I don't feel like reading that book right now. So we don't read. Maybe we watch, or maybe we do something else, you know, but if we have a variety of books going at the same time, then it's likely that we will have one that we're in the mood to read at that moment. Sometimes it helps to force ourselves to read something. Sometimes we have to read books that this is a chore, but I'm going to read it because it's a good chore and I need to do it. But a lot of times, if you're really, really struggling to read, then I would say pick up a page turner, something. That's why I joke about murder mysteries or detective novels. But sometimes if you're in a slump, getting a book like that, that you definitely want to know what happens at the end, can get you back into the habit of reading. Especially if they're, you know, there's some very well-written books in that genre from the past, from Ellis Peters and P.D. James, and even some modern writers, Deborah Crombie. There are great books out there, or a very simple book like a misread book, which is just kind of takes you into a English village life, but it doesn't require much out of you. Sometimes it just helps to read something like that. Jane Austen is always a good option at any time, at any moment in the world.
Yes, that's true.
And the Brontes. So don't I love beat the Brontes yourself as well. Up about it.
Yeah, that's great. That's really helpful. Do you use Audible as well? So you use Kindle and do you use Audible as well?
I do. I listen to audiobooks. And for years I struggled. Was that legit? Is that okay? But then a couple times I had books that I didn't know if I couldn't remember. Did I read that in print or did I listen to it? And it would turn out to be that my brain was okay either way. And you think about it, you're reading aloud to your children. They're hearing audiobooks in that way. So it really does stick with you just as well if it's a book that you're interested in.
Yeah, and I do a bit of everything as well. And I find sometimes if I'm reading a novel that is set in, I don't know, Alabama, and I have no, you know, I don't know what that sounds like, and it's got a lot of local dialect in there. So I actually really enjoy somebody else reading it to me, and I can hear it in the right way. And I know people have said that to me about The Secret Garden, because an American trying to read Yorkshire dialect, which to me is, that's where I'm from, so I hear it in that way. But I think audiobooks are helpful in that way to help us pronounce things and understand local dialect. Definitely.
Well, audio has been around, the voice has been around much longer than print. So I believe that has made us in a way that audio is a primary way for us to enjoy learning and hearing.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember my parents having books on vinyl.
Yes, that's right. We did too. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It was great. Well, I did kind of make a reference this at the beginning of our conversation, but I just want to jump in a little bit. And some of our listeners may already know this, but early 1900s, it would have been early 1900s, Charlotte Mason created a course for mothers. Now, you know, bearing in mind she wasn't a mother, but she was surrounded by them, worked with them, and knew that the important role and calling and job of the home educating mother needed training just as much as any other job. So she set up the Mother's Education course, which focused on, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm using my own language here for those listening, but she focused on health, divinity, education and philosophy, and the study of nature. So I wondered, Cindy, if now I've read some great things about the Mother's Education course. In fact, my listeners will know this, that the workshops that Modern Miss Mason was setting up for 2022, we're actually going to, four of them will cover the four areas that the education course covers. So we're going to be discussing it a little bit more. But I'd love to know if you have any memorable or favorite books that would fit in those categories that you've read and have been helpful for you, for health, divinity, educational philosophy, and nature study.
Yeah, probably the least one I have any like real suggestions for is health, because I mostly read weight loss books. And I actually should write a weight loss book, because I am probably the world's most, I have probably lost more weight than any person on earth so far. Unfortunately, I'm also very good at gaining it back. But I've got those 10 pounds down over and over again. So I do read some books on running, or, you know, I think I read Running Till You're 100 and I really enjoyed it. Wow. And there are books like that. But health is a little bit, it's long books are a little bit different. Even Charlotte Mason, Wear Wool, that is a health.
Yeah. The first workshop that I'm running, in fact, in the beginning of February, I have interviewed a doctor, an English doctor, Dr. Sally Bell, and we have a great conversation on women's health and health for children. So I try to bring it into the 21st century, but hopefully that'll be helpful. But it is helpful.
Oh, that's great. Yes. Yeah.
So hopefully that will trigger some ideas in people. And I've asked her for book recommendations. So yeah, people will be able to come. So okay, so how about the other three? I'm sure you've got plenty on those.
Yeah, those areas. I mean, I do always keep some book on divinity, the word divinity or religion or Christian, yes, reading. I some of my favorites over the years, I love Rosemary Miller's book, From Fear to Freedom. Okay. It is just a wonderful book that frees us up for understanding the gospel in a way that's joyous and full of what God really has offered us, and not this deadly fear that that keeps us from really participating in the full gospel. Thinking of that, my son gave me a book by Mike Mason called Champagne for the Soul. That's another very freeing book about joy. An old favorite of mine was Trusting God by Jerry Bridges. That book really changed my life. I love reading Esther Wall books and Jean Fleming. Those are different people that have had a long time effect on my walk, my Christian walk. And I try to keep going with that, always having, like you said, always having something like that going. A course.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, in education, a course, you know, for the children's sake. I love all of Karen Glass's books. I especially love her newest, In Vital Harmony.
I think it's my favorite. Yeah, definitely.
And I like Stratford Caldecott. I love Beauty and the Word. I think it really does a great job of bringing Charlotte Mason, the living ideas to everyone. Philosophy, I basically stick with, I love C.S. Lewis. I already mentioned The Abolition of Man, The Way to Glory, anything like that, some classic literature. And I wanted to say that if you're reading a really hard book, like a philosophy book, like Augustine or, you know, Plato or any of these people, the audio is very helpful because you can just put it on. I'm reading the Canterbury Tales on audio right now because I would never get through them otherwise.
Yeah, I'm listening to The Divine Comedy very, very slowly on Audible as well.
Yes. That's a those are perfect books. The Paradise Lost, these kind of books are great. Yes. If you really don't feel like you can get through them, listening to them on audio, knowing that these books are not meant for you to understand them the first time around, that there are, you're going to have to, you know, you'll get what you can. Charlotte Mason always says, you know, your mind is going to feed on what it feeds on. Then the next time it'll feed on something else.
Yeah.
And then nature books are, you know, I was thinking, I didn't read a lot of nature books, but I do like a lot of books about or walking. And I like Robert McFarlane's The Old Ways. I like a lot of his books. I like, I love The Last Child in the Woods. And I do like a lot of hiking books. I have several hiking books about hiking in England, in the Lake District, on the Appalachian Trail. Wow. So those are my go-to books for those categories.
That's great. I mean, there's a great mixer. And there are so many, aren't they? I think in those that you've said, I think digging into a variety. I know with nature study, I mean, the yearly almanacs are really helpful, even just looking at when the sun's rising, when it's setting, and the changing over the, you know, what's appearing, what wildflowers are we seeing, what's growing, what's dying down. I think I've loved it over the years, learning about that, and just the pattern, obviously, over different climates.
I love that.
Yeah, they're very good. So I'm reading a book at the moment. I've just started it, actually. It's a Parker J. Palmer book called A Hidden Wholeness, and it's about living an undivided life. So I saw somebody recommended it, and I thought that sounds something I would like from a divinity point of view. It's just interesting, isn't it, reading a variety of authors, even though when I find someone I love, I do try and read more of them.
Yeah, it's like we are made to live, and in a way we have this community of through books. It is a bit of a community. And I think that's why we also like to talk about books and like to talk to each other about books.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit as we wrap up here about your Patreon, because you must encourage a lot of reading on there.
Yeah, so I have a Patreon, which is a mom's discipleship group. And it sounds, I love what you sound like you're doing with the mother's education course. I think that is very needed. And I look at my Patreon as kind of like that. We read books together.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I read Charlotte Mason's volumes out loud for the Patreon, and I do it with commentary. So it's not just me reading it. I actually talk about, you know, things that happen in my family and that sort of thing. Not always, but when it is appropriate. And that is the lowest level. Then the higher level, I have a Saturday with Cindy thing where I do a little video each week for either educational or just Christian encouragement for moms.
Wow.
And then we have times, couple Zoom meetings a month where we either talk about a book or we talk about a parents review article. So, and then we also have a forum, Discord forum. So it's been really a great place to get to know some moms. And I want it to just be a place where I can take the things that I'm taking in and looking back over the past, you know, a little hindsight, a little like, I wish I'd done this, but oh, here's what I did right. And just saying, you know, these are the things that you don't have to worry about. And it just be just discipling moms as best I can at this point in time with the hard things of motherhood, not just the easy things. We kind of get these pictures of life as we wish it would be. And we think, well, if we just, like we're talking about reading some of these kind of self-help books, if we just get this right, our life is going to fall in place and everything's going to be the way it should be. And unfortunately, that is the whole point of the gospel, that we live in a fallen world and sin has messed up a lot of really good things. And even if we do everything right, sometimes things don't go according to plan. I mean, that is so, just to say to moms, you know, it's okay. You do your best and leave the rest to God, because even if you are the perfect person who does everything right, it's no guarantee, because there is sin in the world, but sin has a remedy. We can trust God with that remedy. So that's kind of what I do on my Patreon.
That's beautiful. Wow. Thank you so much for all you do, Cindy. That sounds amazing. How would people find out about that? Have you got a website?
You can go to Patreon/Cindy Rollins to find my Patreon. And then I do have a website, morningtimeformoms.com, where you can also find it there. You can click on the link there. So my main website is morningtimeformoms.com.
Okay. And then on that website, can people find out about all your books that you've written and are out in the world?
Yes, they can. Yes. There's a link for books. So you can go see what books are out there. And there's a link for the Patreon. There's a link for some of our courses and conferences that we've had, if you wanted to buy one of those. We have a back to school conference every year, and that's been we've tried to really focus on actually helping people and be encouraging, and it's gone and it's been we're really.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sounds great. Cindy, this has been amazing. So refreshing, and I'm sure that it's been incredibly helpful, and everyone is trying to jot down all the book titles. I will catch as many as I can, but why don't we just wrap up? Can you tell us, if you haven't already picked up a book, what are you going to read today?
I am reading a fantastic book. I hate to even say it because it's not that easy to find, but it's called The Rosetti Wonderland of Victorian Family History. And I am loving that book so much. It's one of those ones I want to savor. It's just telling about Christina Rossetti and her brother, Dante Gabriel, and their childhood and their family life. And it's very interesting, and enjoying it very much.
Can you say the title again? It's fine. It's just because I know people will want to hear it clearly.
It's called The Rossettis in Wonderland, and it's by Dinah, D-I-N-A-H, Roe, R-O-E.
Sounds wonderful. Oh, enjoy.
It's been in my cart at Amazon for years. And finally, really? I was reading something Ruskin said or something, and I thought, I'm buying that book. it's not a time. Cheap one. So.
Oh, that's amazing. Cindy, thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you for your time. I know you've got lots of recording to do today, so we really appreciate you sharing your wisdom again over here on Modern Miss Mason. And I do hope, Cindy, that we get to hang out in the Lake District again sometime.
I'm planning on it, Lord willing.
Yes, that would be great. Well, thank you. This has been great. And blessings on you.
Thank you, Leah. You're just a blessing to all of us. We all appreciate you so much.